informal circular systems already exist, and they can be scaled and formalized into viable business models. Waste has value, and everything that can be reused, upcycled, or turned into money will not land in the landfill here. And with enthusiasm and drive, a lot can be achieved.
Kenya's cities are growing by the hour, but systems and standards aren't keeping pace. In the next half hour, we will see how selective rules and everyday entrepreneurship can close that gap. It's a kickoff to our series about circular entrepreneurship in Kenya.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Kenya is rich in nature, coastlines, highlands, fertile land, and rich in social capital, a young, inventive population with repair and reuse baked into daily life. Yet, the linear take-make-waste model still steers too many decisions. Today, we look at how selective regulation and practical entrepreneurship flip that script. Hannah, what's the name of the two countries?
Kenya and Germany.
How many people live in these countries?
57 million and 84 million.
What's the average age of the people living there?
20 years and 45.3 years.
Wow. What's the biggest city and the number of inhabitants?
Nairobi, with around 5 million, probably more, and Berlin, with around 3.6 million.
Kenya is slightly larger than France, yet its population is slightly smaller, comparable to Italy's. What's the total length of the train network?
Kenya, with around 2,700 kilometers, but only more or less 800 operational. And Germany with around 33,000 kilometers.
Impressive. What's the GDP per capita?
2,000 USD and 54,000 USD.
And what was the GDP growth in 2023?
5.6 for Kenya. And I have the newest number for Germany, which was zero.
Hannah Dittmeier is the go-to person for foreign companies starting their circular business journey in Kenya. She works for the Delegation of German Industry and Commerce for Eastern Africa. In her role as Head of Competence Center Energy, Environment and Sustainable Economy, she knows the written rules, she knows the unwritten rules, and she knows the people to talk to get started. Hannah gives us an introduction to Kenya.
So we would always say that Kenya is a more diversified and rather resilient economy, especially comparing it regionally. It has quite a strong services sector, and it also acknowledges the very important role of the manufacturing sector. Also, a lot of multinationals have their East African headquarters in Nairobi. So this could be companies like Google, Microsoft, but also BASF, Bayer, Siemens, Maersk, and so on. And of course, Kenya is part of the East African Community, which is a customs union that has a vision of regional integration. Kenya, with Mombasa being the port, is quite well positioned for accessing more than 300 million people in the market.
People are the key dimension here. There are 42 recognized indigenous tribes in Kenya. And when you're there, you feel the community spirit. But Kenya is well connected to the global economy. Many international companies have a central hub in Nairobi. Why is that?
Historical reasons could be one of them, because as an ex-British colony, the level of English is very, very good in Kenya. So you find labor here quite easily. People are often very well educated. So companies can find their technical staff here, but also for higher positions. And I think geographically positioned, and Kenya is not a landlocked country. It has port access with Mombasa, with Lapset coming in Lamu. So yeah, just geographical positioning as well.
Yeah. And what role does the mindset and maybe also the behavior of the Kenyan population
play? Yeah, definitely.
Play?
Of course, with a median age of 20, so very young population, you feel that reflected. So it's super fast, network driven, you know, people hunt for opportunities, you have quick deals, you have lots of WhatsApp groups where things are happening, pop-up ventures, and what people call side hustling over here. So I know a lot of people that have more than 3 business cards for all of their side hustles, you know. So young population, they put this kind of digital first population. Lots of things happening online and on the go. And what I find also important is that people don't mind failing or trying. So there's quite a high tolerance, I would say, for having tried it out. And maybe it works. And otherwise, I do something else. And there's maybe less of a societal pressure that it has to work.
You can find the entrepreneur's spirit everywhere in Kenya. Entrepreneurship is the theme of this series. However, it's not random entrepreneurship. We're interested in the circular economy. So let's look at that.
Where do you see like circular economy thinking and doing already applied in Kenya? Yeah.
Since there is quite a market for secondhand, for example, appliances, you have these informal repair practices, you have reuse economics for clothing, for electronics, also for cars. I would say most of my Kenyan colleagues would have bought a secondhand laptop in their life or secondhand maybe car batteries. Then overall, for example, if you look at the plastic sector, you see plastic waste being collected, shredded, reused or exported, right?
Hannah estimates plastic recycling at 8 to 10%. However, the remarkable figure is that around 70% of the collection and sorting is done by the informal sector. The informal sector is something I heard a lot about in Kenya. Let's unpack that.
So I think what is often surprising for people is that when I mean informal sector, I don't mean people that are self-employed. That is still something else. I talk about the frameworks in which they operate. So these are people that work without being acknowledged by the taxation system. These are also people that might work without licenses. So these are people that depend on a daily livelihood, right? They work in order to bring money back home to their families. And this is on a day-to-day basis. So they operate below any other radar. They are not employed anywhere. They don't have any social security. And now some of the statistics say that around 70% of Kenya's economy is informal. So we are talking about a lot of people.
Meeting people from the informal sector is easy. I went to a place where you cannot miss them. In the next episode, I'll take you on a tour of Dandora Dumpsite in Nairobi, which is the largest landfill in East Africa and one of the largest in the world. People of every age come here to find metal, plastics and glass that they can turn into cash, mostly with their bare hands and without any protection against the poisonous gases. Moms pick waste here to buy food for their babies. Teenagers do it over the weekend to earn some money. And for many people, it's how they make a living. A fair share of the waste is plastic. It is one of the main challenges in Kenya. For a couple of years, it also has been subject to regulation. Let's get a short history of circular regulation in Kenya.
First, there is always the need to align again with the global thinking because we are part of the global community. But unfortunately, also with our current developments of globalization, we have also had a lot of rapid urbanization, which has brought about new challenges and new streams of waste, which we never used to deal with before.
David Ongare is Director Compliance at NEMA, Kenya's National Environment Management Authority. Everywhere I go, people know NEMA. And David is a veteran in the field of circular economy policy in Kenya.
We have the single carrier plastic ban here since 2017. And we also now have the extended producer responsibility regulation. So if you look at these regulations, they introduce important elements. For example, for the plastics, what are the minimum recyclable contents that we should have? So this will help to build up the industry with regard to the recycling practices within the country. But the extended producer responsibility regulation then makes sure that producer takes care of their products throughout the life cycle of the product, but also ensures that a proper collection is done. And then the various components can be reintroduced into the market, maybe through upcycled products or other products.
EPR, or Extended Producer Responsibility, is a concept we will return to later in this series. In my conversation with Alex Musembi from African Collect Textiles and Sarah Nihal from Green Forest Solutions, we will discuss the EPR in textiles. But we don't discuss it in isolation. As millions of tons of textiles from Europe get shipped to Kenya, we will discuss the need for connecting European EPRs with African ones. More about that later.
So I think these new laws help us also deal with the alignments we have, because now we are getting to a point of overdumping and our landfills are becoming full. We also are aware that these new kinds of waste also might end up having higher impacts than the traditional kind of things we have been dealing with. But of course, it might be inevitable at some point that you want to do some additional landfilling or waste-to-energy projects. But I think we are looking at avoidance and reuse and recycling as the preferred options at the moment.
Can you give some examples of the waste streams that are new?
The biggest problems with waste streams now are mostly in the waste electrical and electronic equipment, where we have components causing a challenge here, like the CRTs, which we don't have the capacities to manage here. And although valuable, also we have had overuse, single-use plastic carrier bags and so on. So we are seeing an emergence here where, of course, as our communities also become more affluent, now we are seeing that these ones are starting to pose a big problem. And we can't have people disposing of them in any place or mixing them with other traditional wastes. So these are pressing problems for us now, mm-hmm. in the components of electrical equipment, which we cannot manage.
On paper and in practice, that's bans plus producer responsibility. On the electronic equipment, we'll have two episodes later in this series. E-Waste Initiative Kenya, or EWIC, in the outskirts of Nairobi, collects and repairs a wide variety of electronics. And Close the Gap Kenya refurbishes and resells used computers to close the digital literacy gap. And they don't stop here, because they've built an impact hub at Kenya's coast that serves as an incubator for new circular economy startups. But you will learn more about that later. Let's return to EPRs and what they cover today.
The initial target was mostly on packaging materials. Then, of course, then apart from the packaging materials, we were looking also at the products themselves. And then we also have other areas which are a bit ambitious, because we are covering even motor vehicles and other mobile aspects. But I think our key priority areas was on the packaging material, because before, if you came to my country, we were over packaging. But now it makes sure that we cover aspects of the packaging and the products themselves.
So Kenya has a plan. Now it needs to be implemented. And this needs action on multiple layers.
So that it is not only coming from government, but that also the citizens have an active voice here. We have a color code now for waste, so that waste cannot be mixed. So from the homestead, the waste is in different fractions for ease of collection and reuse. Our challenge now is to set up these enhanced material recovery facilities so that we can scale up the visions of where we want to go. So at the moment, this is the discussion we have done, the general models and what we need to, or how we conceptualize a material recovery facility to be and how to operationalize this.
The hard part is actually standing up material recovery facilities and making the models operational, so the trash bin color code has somewhere real to go. In the episode after next, I will talk to Daniel Paffenholz, owner and managing director of Takataka Solutions. Takataka is Nairobi's most prominent waste collector and recycler. They turn waste into fertilizer and recycle plastics, because plastic waste is an issue in Kenya. If we look into the bins, what are the most popular plastic items we will find there?
In Kenya, the top three litter from plastic would be, on top would be the the water bottles or PET bottles for soft drinks. Then we also have single-use plastic, like polythene, and containers, normal ordinary containers like HDP containers from kitchen cooking oil, dairy products, detergents and shampoos, etc.
This is Richard Kainika. Every recycling professional in Kenya knows Richard. He's an entrepreneur who started his own recycling operations. It grew and grew, and now he is the Secretary General of the Kenya Association of Waste Recyclers. Let's return to the journey of plastics. After consumption, what's the current flow?
So for starters, when a consumer is done with the packaging, usually it depends. It is supposed to be put in a bin. And not every Kenyan would do that. So some will throw them immediately they are done with them. Maybe they are driving or walking or wherever they are. Of course, we have those who would put it in the bin. But basically what happens is that once the consumer is done with the product, it is collected. Currently, we are doing about 30 to 35% collection, which is a good improvement from what we are doing some time back. So the same is collected and then moves to through the informal system, then to processing and onward to recycling. We have some fractions that are not collected as such. But as you asked, once the consumption is done, it is supposed to be collected or thrown away into the environment. Whatever is collected is processed or taken to the landfill.
At the collection state, it kind of depends if I have a local collection, like an official or like an informal one, who I pay to collect the bin.
Yeah, but not all the time. In a different way, waste management is in the hands of the private sector. So the municipalities are not as active in Kenya as maybe they are supposed to be. So how waste is collected now depends, one, on the location of where the waste is generated. Why? Because if it is an upper income, residents, for instance, then you find that they are a bit regulated, they are a bit formal, they would have bins, sometimes even separated bins. Therefore, and they would also have a contracted service provider who would come, collect, and proceed to engage with the waste as regulated. But in a different way, let's say, for instance, in an informal settlement, you find that some residential places don't even have bins. So you find places with communal waste receptacles where most times you find all waste is put there without separation. And lastly, you have very informal areas where people literally just litter the waste. So how is the waste collected? Now, depending on the location, if it is littered on the environment, then we have waste pickers who walk around collecting waste. Only that now the waste that they collect is waste that is of no value, is of value to them. Now, the ones that don't make business sense, they don't pick to clean the environment. They pick to go and sell and to make some money out of that. So if, for instance, a multi-layer plastic material, like what I was saying, was littering on the streets, then the waste pickers will not be picking that. So if there is no other system, then that will have to be left in the environment. Then we have other areas like the example that I said of mixed bins, where they put everything together. Oftentimes you find they have arrangement with the community-based organization. This could be a group of people within the area who will come collect the materials, go and do the manual separation and make sense of what is of value and what is not of value. Sometimes could be put in a collective place for the government, the municipality to come and collect, or they could as well take it to the bin, to the dump site, or they could as well decide to just litter. Then lastly, we have the upstream, upper income areas where everything is done the right way. And what is recyclable is taken to the recyclers, and what is not is taken to the dump site, also the landfill.
Dump sites and landfills pose a threat to Kenya's rich natural resources and the health of its people. Luckily, many entrepreneurs set out on a journey to turn trash into cash. During this series, we will meet a prominent one. Mr. Green Africa was one of the first to industrialize plastics recycling. Now, they're providing recycled plastics to FMCG brands and closing the loop. Stay tuned for this deep dive. What moves fastest here isn't a grand master plan. It's everyday entrepreneurship. In an emerging economy, thousands of small operating decisions add up. A wastepreneur who creates drinking glasses out of bottles. A taxi driver who starts a resale shop. A recycler who pins down a steady offtake. Community networks lower risk and spread know-how. When selective rules meet this kind of initiative, the system shifts from the bottom up. Over the next episodes, we'll stay with the doers who turn that logic into livelihoods. Taxi Ventures, an emerging startup from Kenya's coast that is as circular as it gets. The founder, Faith, uses the leftovers from the fishery that would otherwise end up in the dump sites. Yet, she turns it into animal feeds and fertilizers so value and nutritions stay in the local economy and feed a growing population. And we will close the series with the entrepreneurial story that touched me most. What started with giving yoga sessions to women in slums turned into an unparalleled impact company. PadMat is taking post-industrial textile waste and creating reusable menstrual health products. It builds the basis for girls' education, justice, and life in dignity. It reminds me of the privileges most of us experience and tend to forget.
Waste in Kenya has been looked at as a poor man's business. But we have seen that the people, the informal waste collectors, have been able to, in a way, organize themselves in some kind of cooperative without any push from government. And we can see that within that space, they have been able to organize and innovate and, in a way, bring another segment which was not part of the normal government structure. Also, we are looking at these people coming up with the alternatives for materials with a smaller footprint to the environment. And therefore, I know that this is maybe not the traditional issue in Europe, but we have many informal people who pick waste ordinarily. And we are seeing that now they are also trying to make their own products and sell. And I think this is an important lesson and an interesting experiment for us.
Actually, the informal sector is, we call it juakari, or hot sun. It's a ringo for working under the sun, you know, working by yourself without help and without any system and enforcement of the public sector. And the informal sector is self-driven. I mean, it's like you and your wife and your children contribute to other business. And that business depends entirely on you. You have no support from the bank. You have no support from the government. I mean, it's a business that you are supporting, and the risks are tremendous. So the informal sector and the way it happens in Kenya, that through the partnership, at the end of the day, you find comprehensive recycling happening in Kenya. Despite being informal, it demonstrates impressive efficiency.
You got excited about starting your circular journey in Kenya? This is what you need to keep in mind.
We would always say test it small. Yeah. So do a small pilot or joint venture just to test the pricing, test your supply chains. How are your consumers reacting? Right. Always use a local business partner. So don't try to go by yourself. There's lots of things that somebody wouldn't know about how the market operates and who you need to talk to. So make sure that you have that local person or company. Also, and especially when you want things to move very fast and you just don't know why it takes so long, right? So this is the way to do it so that you don't lose patience, but you have somebody that explains it to you, which I'm always very happy, you know, if I'm struggling with something and I have a Kenyan colleague who explains it to me. focus on urban markets first. So Nairobi and Mombasa, maybe as one of the other one, you have higher purchasing power and you often have a bit higher awareness levels on circularity and anything around waste management. So those would be my next one. And then doesn't matter how big or small you are, you need to have as a company, you need to have your financing situation clear because that is what people will ask. And if you want to sell something into the market, you have to have financing options for people available that cannot afford the full price upfront. So yeah, everything around pay as you go or leasing to own, you know, anything around this and how you can make that possible and what are the right prices to set.
Kenya's landscape and optimism are real assets. The linear model is the constraint. And practical entrepreneurship, supported by selective, enforceable rules, is the way through. In the coming episodes, we'll stand inside those solutions. From Tandora Dumpsite to plastics, textiles, IT refurbishment, women's health, and the blue economy. We'll watch waste turn into value, while securing the precious communities and nature Kenya is gifted with.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
This marked the kickoff to our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. Next week, I'll take you on a tour through Kenya's largest dump site and the slums around it. Let's build a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.